You're listening to EPN, the E-Podcast Network.
This is Hope Katz-Gibbs, founder of Incandescent Public Relations and the Incandescent Group. Thank you for joining us for the Incandescent Radio Show on the Entrepreneur Podcast Network. We're here with Danielle Goldstone here at Ashoka headquarters. Danielle is, her official title is Change Leader, and she is in charge of their empathy program. Thanks so much for being with us here today.
Thank you.
And thank you for having me into your headquarters. Tell me a little bit about the empathy program, or a lot about it actually. What does it mean to be empathetic, and why is it so important?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Ashoka has the mission of everyone a change maker. So trying to create a world where every person, literally every person, believes that they can have their own ideas, use those ideas to take initiative and drive change in the world. And we believe that that is essential in a world where change is as rapid as it is today and getting more so. So in Ashoka's work with social entrepreneurs around the world, we have honed in on empathy as a really foundational skill in one's capacity to be what we call a change maker in the world. So if one doesn't understand the feelings and perspectives of other people, it's difficult to be able to see through problems to solutions. And so and that's how we define empathy. We talk about it as the ability to understand the feelings and perspectives of others and to guide one's actions accordingly. So there's an active component of that. It's how you apply empathy in order to be a change maker.
Not everyone is born being empathetic?
So the science shows that the moment is ripe now because there's more and more science on this topic and research. And it shows that really it's an innate capacity that we all have as human beings, but like any other skill or capacity that we're born with, if you don't develop it, if you don't practice it on a regular basis, then you're not going to be very empathetic. So it takes really treating it as a skill so that you are growing up, learning it, practicing it in order to develop higher and higher abilities, empathic abilities.
And I would imagine in some communities or even some households where there's a patriarchy or violence, that kids see that being empathetic is could be a dangerous quality.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's right. And that's why we need, Ashoka's working largely with schools, but we're trying to draw parents in as much as possible because obviously parents are the biggest influence on their kids. In terms of a social change strategy, it's more difficult to get into every home in the country than it is into every school. So we're using schools as the main target. But the schools that we're working with have ways of engaging parents and families and communities in their work. So it's not just kids spending the school day in this isolated space and then going back to homes that may not be empathetic homes, but it's something that we do have to be aware of. Parents play a really critical role here, and we have to help parents understand why this is so important and how they can develop their own capacity for empathy so that they're modeling it for their kids as well.
That's great. I want you to tell me all about the Ashoka programs, but let's just go to the sidebar here and give us a few tips for parents. What can we do for our kids to make sure that they have this important skill?
Sure, and we have we've developed a website, startempathy.org, where we're putting a lot of these tips for both parents and educators. One of the things that and we're gathering these tips, by the way, from Ashoka Fellows, from educators, from other parents, people that really have a lot of experience in this. But a few of the trends that come out of that listening. Very simple, very obvious. But we have one Ashoka fellow, actually, David Castro, who has this 8 minutes of empathy experiment where you just spend 8 minutes listening to somebody, and this could be your child, this could be somebody you work with, this could be anybody, and just spend 8 minutes really just listening without interrupting, without trying to solve their problem, without, you know, just really listening and hearing what their perspective is and trying to understand their feelings. So that's just a very simple one. another thing with parents in particular is being vulnerable, allowing yourself to be vulnerable with your kids. So, instead of first just asking kind of how their day was, talking about your own day and some of the things that you experienced and some of the feelings that you experienced during the day, and being open about that so they see you expressing those emotions so that they feel more comfortable doing that as well.
That's interesting, because I know a lot of parents feel like that would be a bad parenting tool to, you know, let your kids know too much about what goes on in your life, because you're not protecting them then,
mm-hmm.
for instance.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you
Right. And obviously there are boundaries to that. And I will disclaim right now, I am no parenting expert. But there's a lot of the folks we've talked to, vulnerability becomes an important aspect of creating empathic cultures generally, whether in the workplace, in your home, in schools. It's something we don't allow. We don't allow people to bring their emotions into the workplace or into school. And if we're going to build kids' ability to be empathic, then that needs to be part of the conversation. So I think that's where a lot of our fellows and other experts that we talk to stress that as an important aspect. But yes, of course, there are definitely boundaries in kind of what you're saying to your kids, but certainly sharing how your day was, I don't think there's
seems
any
benign.
Danger. Yeah.
But it's interesting, too, talking about breaking down barriers, having boundaries, appropriate boundaries, but breaking down your own fears and then allowing your children not to have those same fears.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really complicated
mm-hmm.
for a lot of people,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
no matter how old you are.
Mm-hmm.
But I love that that's one of the qualities
mm-hmm.
that you look for.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
Something to definitely think about.
Yeah, yeah.
What,
and another just easy one is, there's so much research about how literature and reading helps develop empathy, because you're inherently putting yourself in the shoes of the characters that you're reading about. But we often don't, I think when we read to kids, we often, and I do this, reading to my niece and nephew, or where, you ask about the what of the story, but you don't use that opportunity, and it's a huge opportunity to ask the questions as you're reading with a kid, ask about the feelings of the characters.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think she's feeling in this situation? And using that time so you're developing your kid's reading ability as well, but using that as also an opportunity to help them develop empathy.
Excellent. So that's for the little kids. And Bill also talked a lot about the program Molly has
mm-hmm.
created, Girls on the Run, Molly
yeah.
Barker,
yeah.
and the woman in Canada.
Mary Gordon,
mm-hmm. Who brings the infants in, and we love those ideas, and I'm looking forward to seeing them in our U.S. schools, especially here in Northern Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
But talk a little bit about what teenagers need and can
mm-hmm.
do, because especially when they hit middle school, it gets so complicated for them to
mm-hmm.
deal with hormones and whatnot. So how do you
mm-hmm.
stay empathetic
mm-hmm.
despite sort of the mean girl syndrome
right.
or the mean boy syndrome?
You put empathy into action. So that's Ashoka has a program called Youth Venture that works with 12 to 20-year-olds, basically, to develop and launch their own social ventures in their schools, in their communities. Really, we kind of send kids to school, and they sort of go through that experience passively consuming knowledge and rules. But it's such a great time and critical time to really develop the skills to be creative, to figure out how to solve problems, to figure out how to work in teams to solve problems. And so our Youth Venture program works with kids to do that, basically. So young people in middle school and through college, really, that have ideas, they see a problem in their school and or their community and want to do something about it, we support them to basically create what we call a venture, and they build a team around it, so they get other kids involved and help them lead that initiative. And this is something that, Ashoka has a program for it, but it's something that any school or any parent could do. It's really just getting out of the way of kids. Often adults feel the need to control and really when parents and teachers step out of the way, often young people will do amazing things. And we need to, obviously, again, with the kind of parameters and the boundaries that young people need, but really step out of the way and let them create and let them do and encourage them to do that. I visited a school in Bridgeport, Connecticut. It was a Catholic school, and it was phenomenal, the environment that they had created there, where basically the school was responsive to what kids wanted to do. And this is, mind you, a blue ribbon school, so they are doing really well on all the traditional standards, but they creating the space for young people to take charge. So a teacher there told me a story about how she had a sixth grader that came to her crying because he had been unable to come up with an invention for this project that they were a part of at the University of Connecticut called the Invention Convention. And he was upset because it was a day or a week before the convention and he hadn't been able to come up with something. Well, he was in her classroom when her eighth grade class, social studies class, came in. And here's where empathy and change-making come into play. The empathy was such a part of the culture of the school that instead of laughing at the kid crying in the room, they asked the teacher, why is he crying? And they were concerned. And she explained, and they said, well, why don't we help him? And she said, okay, so close your social studies books. And they spent that period. She recognized it as a learning opportunity. She obviously had the freedom within the school to make that decision, to seize that opportunity. And they spent that classroom basically helping the sixth grader develop some ideas that he could then take and run with and create his thing. And so that's the type of school that we really need, because that's the way the world works.
Yeah, brainstorming sessions.
Right. and those are huge opportunities that most teachers wouldn't spot necessarily, or if they did, and many of them do, they feel completely
powerless
to be able to, they need to teach social studies, in that period. That's what they have to do. It's what they've been told they have to do. And they don't have that freedom to make that choice to seize that learning opportunity. And that's a problem.
It sounds like a real undercurrent for the Empathy Project is just letting people do what comes naturally to them and encouraging them to be the special person they are, the empathetic, mm-hmm. caring kind of person that sometimes society beats out of us when we're trying to win or compete or ace a test or
right.
something like
right.
that.
Right, and actually there's a lot of, there's some interesting research on basically babies tend to exhibit naturally helping behavior. So there are these studies that have been done where you have a baby or an infant and an adult in a room, and the adult drops something and then kind of pretends and acts as if they can't reach it, and the baby will come over and get the pen or whatever it is that the adult dropped and give it to them. So they recognize, oh, this person is struggling to reach this thing, I can go help. And so that research suggests, again, that this is very innate, that we're born with this capacity. So the problem can't be there, right? The problem is that, yeah, somehow we don't, we beat it out, or and certainly the education system that we have, which is very, was developed in the industrial age and was created to serve industrial age purposes, doesn't support the development necessarily of that skill. And so that's what we're basically seeking to change, so that every child, as they're growing up and as they're going through school, would be getting an education that is equipping them with empathy and teamwork, leadership, change making, this other set of skills that they need to be effective change makers in the world.
Sounds like a beautiful change. And then you also have a program that works at the college level.
Yes, so our Ashoka U program works with universities that are basically modeling social entrepreneurship education at the college level, and thinking through in deep ways this kind of everyone a changemaker vision and what role universities can play in advancing that world. there are several Changemaker campuses, and we as the Empathy Initiative actually took that model for our work with elementary schools. So we have Changemaker elementary schools, Changemaker campuses at the university level. So we're building this link through the entire education system about how you educate people to be able to be changemakers in the world. Whether at the university level, but of course starting with as early as possible. So certainly elementary and really even pre-K. But
amazing. And you're working with Harvard University, I understand.
Yeah, so we've been talking to some faculty up there, and they are working on a research project around distilling from evidence-based programs that cultivate empathy and other skills. What are the scalable strategies that any educator or parent could use? Because part of the problem is you have very expensive social-emotional learning programs out there, great programs, pretty expensive for schools. And there are principles in those programs that can be used by anybody. And so it doesn't, for schools that can't afford it or whatever it is, what are the things that the strategies that they can use to help cultivate these skills even without the expensive programs?
You can talk about those principles. What would they be?
So the project is still still being developed, but still in progress, so we don't have the final report on that. But we're certainly seeing, even in our direct work with schools, various different, and of course with our fellows, various different strategies that we think are important for this. And so we've actually distilled kind of three design principles around creating an empathic or creating an environment where empathy is developed as a skill. And really this could be applicable to any institution. We're obviously looking at schools specifically, but these principles were distilled from the work of many, many Ashoka fellows in many different fields across the world. And the first is that, as I said before, you treat empathy as a skill. So, I think whether or not it is a skill, or we get caught up in thinking empathy is just a value or a character trait, a genetic thing that's only some people have. And what we see Ashoka fellows doing, and schools now, as we're getting more engaged in that space, is treating it as a skill. So helping kids develop it, helping them practice it, looking to measure it. People think of empathy as a soft skill, but really, it can be a hard skill if we define that simply by kind of, what skills you need to succeed in the world and that are measurable. So treat empathy as a skill. Then there's a cultural aspect. How do you create a culture for open exchange? And that's where the vulnerability and these sorts of things come in. How do you create environments of trust within schools? So one of our Changemaker schools, Mission Hill in Boston, they've created an incredible culture of trust in the school among the teachers, between the teachers and the students, among the students, that makes developing these skills just part of their daily experience, basically. So that culture is really important. What are the conditions through which empathy can thrive? And then finally, there's a systemic element to this. How do you create the systems that encourage, incentivize action, empathy, empathic action, basically? So professional development of teachers in schools is a critical kind of systemic aspect. If you don't have teachers that have this set of skills or know how to cultivate them in kids, then it's not going to work, right? So are you building empathy into the professional development of teachers? This school in Bridgeport that I mentioned, building a risk-free environment, basically, where you can allow young people to act on their empathy and use those moments. So there's a lot of knowledge that we've gathered, and certainly schools have a wealth of ways of developing this. From the disciplinary policy of the school, that's a key opportunity for whether you're going to cultivate empathy or not.
How do you
deal with discipline, right? And
like, for example?
So, you know, do you just punish kids, basically? Do you send them out of school? Do you suspend them? One of our schools has a no suspension, you know, policy, basically. Or do you help them through that, you know, have rules around, you know, behavior that's allowed in the school or not, but do you help resolve conflicts between students, help students resolve their own conflicts, rather than just letting behavior problems kind of escalate till you just kick the kid out of school, which would be a very kind of unempathic or non-empathic, you know, way of dealing with discipline, right? So there are strategies that schools that get this use to, it just change, you know, it changes your whole framework about how you're educating kids, right? Bill was mentioning Jill Violet and Playworks, her program. You know, most schools are saying we don't have time for play, right? That's if you change your perspective and think, okay, empathy is as important as reading and writing and math, then suddenly play becomes a really important part of the school day, and you're gonna make sure that you have recess and have other times that kids are playing with each other so that they're developing this set of skills. So it's just a framework shift where if you really think, I mean, it's one thing for a school to say, well, we believe in kids being kind to each other and we promote that as a value. That's great. But if you actually think, not only is that a value, this is as important as reading class and math class, then it shifts your whole thinking, right, about how you design the school, about how you develop the disciplinary policy, about how you engage parents, how you structure classrooms. You know, we have the principal at Mission Hill, the school I mentioned in Boston, she has an open office policy. You know, the principal's office, when I was growing up, and certainly in a lot of schools still, was a very bad place to be, right? if you were getting sent to the principal's office, you were in trouble.
Bad news.
You were in trouble, right. And she said, that's a problem. You know, my office should be a place where kids can come so you find those ways of creating an environment that encourages kids to explore, to create, to collaborate with others, to express their feelings, and that makes all the difference. So it's really about framework change, and it shifts. Once you get it, it really shifts how you think about parenting or educating or any number of things that we all do.
It's a real paradigm shift for a lot of
yes.
people, which is very exciting to me as a parent and an entrepreneur and someone with a passion for education. But I wonder about your critics. I mean, especially, we just did a story in the magazine about the future of men, how there are five types of men, and they're sort of the good old boys. And I could see that there's a huge echelon of business owners and parents, too, who say, you know, tough love is sort of weak too, you know, discipline. I was disciplined. My father was disciplining, mm-hmm. you know, and that's the only mm-hmm. way that I should mm-hmm. behave. So how do you talk? How do you approach
yeah,
this?
Yeah, and I want to be clear that this isn't about no discipline. It's not about just being nice. You know, we get that a lot, but it's really not. It's about you know, it's about just responding to things in a different way. You know, I sometimes talk about this Ashoka fellow in Mali in West Africa that I visited. And she has a school, and I was visiting the school on a day where the opposition political party had basically gotten kids in schools everywhere to out of school, and there were protests and all sorts of things. And this fellow, Maria Keita, believed so much in what she was doing. There's no way she was letting her kids out of school on this day. I was there. She had young teenagers throwing rocks at the school, trying to get kids out of the classroom. And she she got these teenagers into her office, and I was sitting there watching this. She wasn't nice to them. You know, these kids were causing a huge problem for her. You know, and she... you know, so she was upset, and she was upset at them, but instead of just kind of you know, yelling at them and sending them away, she asked them, why are you doing this? You know, and she was really trying to understand what had happened to these kids that they felt inspired to suddenly be throwing rocks at a school of younger kids. You know, she wasn't nice at all. These two went away and she and I sat there and she started thinking about how is she going to win those kids over to what she was trying to do.
Wow.
That to me is empathy, right? It's not being nice when there's a need for rules and punishment and so forth, but it's about understanding why people are acting the way they are or what they're feeling and trying to understand that so that you can see through the problem. And this is what social entrepreneurs, by the way, do brilliantly, is that instead of reacting to problems, they empathize with the systems, with the individuals or the institutions that are causing the problem, to try to understand what are their incentives so that I can change those incentives and then solve the problem that way, right? And that's social entrepreneurs really that, when I see that in somebody, that's when I know I've come across a social entrepreneur. And so, you know, that's at sort of a systemic level, but that starts, you know, at in elementary school, developing,
mm-hmm.
you know, these skills early on. So, so this, again, it's not about, I don't even use the word compassion, which a lot of people use, interchangeably with empathy, because I think empathy is a more neutral thing, which I think is a good thing. It's not pity. It's not sympathy. It's not do-gooder, you know, this or that. It's simply understanding what somebody else is feeling, their perspective, and then guiding your action accordingly to be able to create greater impact in the world. And, you know, you have a company like Apple create very empathic products, you know, very empathic to the user, and suddenly, you know, they're one of the best companies, you know, in the world. So it's not just about, you know, it's not just about doing good and being nice. And it's really about this is a skill that helps us all thrive in the world because it allows us to understand other perspectives. And if you understand other perspectives, suddenly your world opens up, right? If you had a very narrow view about something, suddenly you hear another perspective and that allows you to open up kind of all possibilities that you wouldn't have imagined on your own. I mean, that's the beauty of collaborating with other people and understanding other perspectives. So
empathy begets empathy.
Mm-hmm.
That's a cavalcade of goodness. Tell us a little bit about the hotel situation. We were chatting before we got
mm-hmm.
on the air. Tell us a little bit about that situation.
Yeah, so there, and this is simply from, I think, a New York Times article I read, but the Tata Group in India, a major corporation in India, that actually has several, I think, subsidiary companies, but their hospitality company owns the Taj Hotel in Mumbai, which was attacked by terrorists, as we all remember, a year or two ago. The hotel was burning, basically, had been bombed. And this article talks about how the employees of the hotel literally risked their lives trying to help get guests out of the hotel. So we're, you know, running, and some of them did actually die trying to do this. So, and the interesting thing was that the managers of the company didn't even understand this, didn't understand who would risk their life, you know, in a burning building when they didn't have to. You know, this was an unforeseen terrorist act, you know, and so the managers were trying to understand this. And they did some research and basically figured out that Tata hires people based on their skills of empathy and related skills. And they bypass the best college universities in India or the top scoring students in those universities to find the people that have a certain set of skills that they valued as a company. And as a result of that, you have the situation where you've got your employees, you know, saving the lives of your guests because they were people that came in with empathy and other skills. And you have a major company basically valuing that in their recruitment process, valuing it over traditional traditional skills of, you know, finding people at the top of their class that that you think are the ones that are going to, you know, be the best. But really, they knew that wasn't as important for their staff as these other skills. And the result was you have this amazing story from the Taj. So
wow, that really, that captures the whole idea. Mm-hmm. I love that. Talk about change. The power of empathy. It's beautiful. Tell our listeners where they can find more information about Ashoka's empathy programs.
Yep, so we have this movement platform website. It's www.startempathy.org, where we are aggregating a lot of content around empathy. It's where you can find tips for parents. You can find spotlights of schools that are doing this. And many other resources around empathy. There's also, we have a website which is empathy.ashoka.org, which is our institutional site that gives you a little bit more background on the initiative itself and why Ashoka is doing this. So.
And the Youth Ventures Program, I want to find that out for my son. how do we get some information?
You can go to genv.net is their website. So you can find
about Youth Ventures.
About Youth Venture, yeah.
Excellent, excellent. Well, it was a pleasure to talk to you today, Danielle.
You too.
I can't thank you enough for your time, and hopefully your good work will be listened to and understood by many.
Great, thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us for the Incandescent Radio Show on the Entrepreneur Podcast Network.
This is the ePodcast Network.